Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hit high in the air. Deep right field. Blackman is back. Track wall. Good. And Sung Won is saying, oh no! Albies golfs an 0-2 single to bring Donaldson to the plate, and he goes Oppo.
Oppo, a big three-run bomb the other way. Chip Carey on Fox Sports Southeast as the Braves get that game-winning home run in a manner of speaking from Josh Donaldson that saved them from blowing yet another lead to the Colorado Rockies and salvaging at least something on a Sunday afternoon at SunTrust Park. Welcome back to the morning show with John and Hugh on this Monday. A lot to chop up from the weekend. And, of course, we're talking about the Braves and where they stand now with the San Diego Padres coming into town. Well, they managed to get something out of that Colorado series, and that was Josh Donaldson. But it was also a case where Ozzie Albies had a huge game yesterday. Three hits, including a pair of Ozzie Albies home runs.
I'll see if he stays on the attack now that he has the lead.
He did. Fly ball, well hit. That's hit toward right. Blackman back. That ball is up. That ball is gone. Two-homer game for Ozzie.
Ozzie just wanted to show everybody and go both ways.
Yeah, exactly. He went to two home runs. Freddie Freeman talking about how Ozzie Albies is helping out the top of the order.
It's been great again. This is the first half he had last year is what we're seeing again right now. It's electric, and hopefully he's figured out that left side. It's been great so far this first month of the season. If he can keep going like that, we're going to have a nice little top of the lineup right there for a while.
Yeah, we are. So I think they finally settled on it, Hugh, and Freddie Freeman's right. I mean, Ozzie Albies had that big first half last year and then kind of cooled in the second half after the All-Star break, but you put him at the top of the lineup. Now you got Ozzie hitting, you got Josh Donaldson hitting, Freddie's hitting. We just got to get Acuna's hitting. He's just not hitting home runs right now, but he'll get back to that. That four is if they hit, Hugh, that's a deadly four.
Yeah, it looks like it's starting to come together for the Braves right now, John. And the only thing we have to do now is make sure that we try to figure out this bullpen situation. We try to figure out the middle relief and the bullpen situation, and we'll have something to play with. But this is the ebb and flow of baseball. And you know, it's kind of funny when you were talking about Brian Jordan and some of the things that he said about the Braves. He said it took him about a month. It looked like they're starting to get into their groove a little bit. About a month into the season, it looked like they're starting to get into a little bit of a groove.
Well, the Braves are 13-14. They're a game under 500. Little Dow Jonesy so far, you know, as the team goes. And we all know that Saturday we had the really bad, blown save by A.J. Minter.
Yeah, and he tried to come back. He said he vowed to come back and try to redeem himself. Didn't look like that was going to be the case, and it also looked like Brian Snicker wasn't about to take that chance with A.J. Minter as far as that was concerned yesterday. So he put him out there a little bit early. So, you know, and Josh Donaldson came out and did his thing. This is what this team is right now, John. A.J. Minter has gotten to the point where if Brian Snicker wouldn't have pulled him yesterday, and something bad would have happened.
It was already starting to happen.
Yeah, I would have probably been like, you know what, it's probably about time to move on from this. Don't never want to be premature, but boy, that's enough. That would have probably been enough.
Yeah, because they put Sabak in, and then he was, you know, doing his thing again, and it was like, I know they're looking for something that may not be there. Then Luke Jackson pitched fairly well yesterday, and he's really started to settle in.
Somebody has to step up.
Maybe he's the guy that can settle in there. Alongside Dan Winkler. It's just been frustrating. You don't have Vizcaino out there and whatnot. But the hitting did. Four home runs yesterday by the team. Two by Ozzie, one by Freeman, and then the big blast by Donaldson. But, you know, the fact is that here's a funny thing. The Braves scored eight runs yesterday, but they were terrible with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, they stranded a lot of runners just this. It was a couple times during that game yesterday where you saw that the Braves were in position to even, you know, to tie it up and even take over, take the lead. But they just couldn't get guys. They couldn't move guys. Yeah. And it was real frustrating. I think it was like in the sixth and the seventh inning especially. It was really tough for them to move guys.
Right, yeah. Second and third, yeah, the bases loaded. And, you know, Camargo or Markakis or somebody couldn't get a run across. And it was like, oh, my gosh. You know, they're hitting pop-outs or they're striking out. And you're like, oh, my gosh. You know, for your role for a clutch hit. And then they got the clutch hit from Josh Donaldson, the three-run bomb. But if they
exactly
sit around,
what you need.
If they sit around Hugh and wait, we're talking about the Braves beating the Rockies yesterday. If you sit around waiting for, that's the one thing I don't want this team to do. I don't want this team offensively to sit around and wait for the three-run bomb.
I don't think they are. They were trying to be aggressive. It was just that Colorado's defense was pretty good yesterday in those key situations. I mean, they were trying to pull the ball a few times. It just didn't go in their favor. That's kind of how I saw the game yesterday, John. I mean, because they know that sometimes they're going to have to play small ball. They're not going to always rely on the long ball. So, you know, it looked like they were trying to, you know, pull the ball a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So it just wasn't falling. It wasn't falling in the gaps for them yesterday.
Yeah, one of the things I'd like to see the Braves, I just looked it up, have 11 steals this year. I'd like to see them be more aggressive. You know, for a while, you know, one of the things when this team really worked well last year, and we've seen it in pieces this year, Hugh, when they're aggressive on the base paths, they tend to create a lot of their own chances. They tend to, you know, be a team that can, you know, kind of turn that other little level up they have, which is a little bit of team speed, and use that to their advantage. And I'm not sure that they've done that quite enough this year, because it's almost like they're afraid to take the bat out of the hands of Donaldson. Or now that you've moved Acuna to the cleanup role, you're afraid to, you know, take the bat out of his hands too. So I'd like to see them run a little bit more and maybe try and force the issue, be aggressive on the base paths. I think they have to some degree, but I would.
They were early on in the season. They were very, very aggressive in the first few the series with the Phillies. And I think it was early on. I think it was the Mets as well. They were very aggressive on the base paths.
Yeah, the Braves have only attempted 17 steals this year, as opposed to somebody like Kansas City's attempted 40. And again, that's Kansas City's thing. It's really all they got. So they have to try and steal bases. They don't have a lot of power on that team. But yes, being aggressive, and there's no reason they shouldn't be aggressive in that regard. What we're going to do about the bullpen, I have no idea. I just don't. I mean,
I think at some point you're going to have to start trying to groom one of these young pitchers to go into the bullpen. I think that's what you're going to have to do, because, you know, to have A.J. Minter out there and he's trying to get it right, you know, you like his stuff, but yesterday, after his outing Saturday, yesterday, it, you know, you could tell Brian Snicker looked at it like, hey, man, I can't afford to take this chance. You know, the score was, what, 7-6? You can't afford to take the chance and hoping that you can work your way out of these jams that you gotten yourself into. So he pulled him. So it looks like Brian's almost at the point now where he's about to start making adjustments as far as his closer is concerned as well.
Well, I mean, your point is well taken, because now that you've got Mike Foltynewicz back, boy, you know what? I mean, he wasn't great, but he was, you know, it's good to see him back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so with Foltynewicz back, you have Gausman, Fried, Soroka's pitching tonight, Foltynewicz and Tehran. You've got five guys, right? That means that down in the, you know, Bryce Wilson's been, you know, a lot of guys have been ping-ponging, but Bryce Wilson, Kyle Wright, Sean Newcomb. Right? To me, there's no reason that shouldn't be your middle relief.
Yeah, you got to say, listen, somebody's going to get an opportunity. This is, if I'm Brian Snicker, this is what I'm saying. Somebody has to take advantage of this opportunity in this middle relief role right now. Now, that's not to say that you won't get a chance to be back in the starting rotation, but right now, you've seen what we've been dealing with, especially somebody in the closer position. Need to find somebody that's going to come out there and just take command of the situation. Haven't had that yet. Been a whole lot of lip service up until this point. Been a whole lot of lip service.
You know, and today's athlete, as opposed to the, you know, it used to be that, and this was true back in the day, when before there were quote-unquote closers, or you did 6, 7, 8, 9, or any of that stuff, you just had a bullpen, and nobody was really a closer. Starters went 9 innings. They used to have things called complete games, and they pitched 300 innings in a year, but suddenly they can't pitch 160 or their arm's going to fall off. I don't really understand why it's changed so much over the last 30 years, but it has. All those great starters that you can think of. I mean, literally almost every great starter in history began in the bullpen. Nolan Ryan was a reliever. I mean, they all start in the bullpen.
You know what I think it is, John, and this is what I've heard from guys that have pitched a lot and people that have watched the game a lot. There's a big difference between throwers and pitchers. You know, because now there's been such a huge emphasis on throwing the baseball like 90, 100 miles an hour that is different from pitching. See, it's different when you pitch because you have that off-speed stuff and you have the ability to slow it down and be able to have a lot of movement on the ball. Now they just want people out there throwing heat. So I think that's the biggest difference. And when you have guys out there throwing like 90, 95 and stuff like that, they're more worried about them blowing their arm out or getting tired. So that's probably what it is.
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, I –
Because you know what,
think about Bob Gibson or Nolan Ryan or Randy Johnson, they were all at 100 miles an hour pitching 9 innings.
But they were able to paint the corners and do different things, and they were able to slow it down a little bit. You know who I think about when I think about pitchers that were very, very productive, but they didn't throw that hard? I think of a guy like Jamie Moyer. And I never forget Jimmy Rollins telling me what made Jamie Moyer so hard to hit is because, number one, the ball would move so slow that you would look at it like it was a big fat meatball coming across the plate, but then all of a sudden it would just drop, and that's what made it so hard. He had so much movement on his ball. You know, it wasn't the hardest throwing guy out there, but he had so much movement, he was very crafty as a pitcher. A lot of guys don't do that anymore. They're just throwing straight heat. You can't hit what you can't see, and I think that's the philosophy of most general managers, most pitchers nowadays.
Well, today begins the new National Signing Bonus. It is back.
Woo-hoo! It's time to reveal our National Signing Bonus code word. The code word is
Silver. S-I-L-V-E-R. Silver is the code word. You have till 7:59 to text SILVER to 72881. That is S-I-L-V-E-R, SILVER, to 72881, and you'll win a whole bunch of silver in the National Signing Bonus. That's SILVER to 72881. Try and win $1,000 worth of silver.
Thousand.
Well, it's not actual silver. You actually just get cash. Silver to 72881, silver to 72881. The National Signing Bonus is back, and we'll have code words at 9 after the hour all day long here on Sports Radio 92.9. The game, first one up today, though, is silver, S-I-L-V-E-R, to 72881. Don't text the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. Don't make that mistake because it's not going to get you anywhere. Text silver to 72881. Braves taking on the Padres. Padres come in. This is a Padres team that made a lot of changes in the offseason, and so far it's worked for them. They're
very, very well.
They're a team that
because a lot of people felt like when Manny Machado went there, like, what was he going there for? Did he just take the money? Or how good were they potentially going to be? Yeah, mm-hmm. It worked out. It's going pretty good for them so far this season.
Yeah, well, right now they're, you know, a team that's 16-12 and has played really good baseball, and they're getting hitting throughout their lineup, not just from Manny. Manny's been off to an okay start. Look, they're 16-12, and Manny Machado's not exactly hot. I think he's hitting .250 with four home runs. That's not exactly hot. But Eric Hosmer's hitting. They have other guys in that lineup that are hitting. And so this San Diego team comes in, you know, feeling pretty good about itself. And one of the things that's true about the Braves, too, is they've got to start winning at home. All right? They're 8-8 at home, Hugh. And they had a lot of home games early in the year,
mm-hmm.
and they're not taking advantage of SunTrust Park. They're 8-8 at home. You play 500 ball at home, you're not making the playoffs. End of story. You're not.
I do not disagree with that. You got to play better. You definitely have to play better, and you have to get better pitching at home. I think that's probably been part of the reason why. Look at some of the outings that we've had at home. They haven't been stellar outings, so you have to play better at home.
And then you can't blow games like you did.
Yeah, that's another thing. When Colorado was here, there were some opportunities where you blew two games. You had the opportunity here to win. So you can't blow games at home.
Yeah, so the Braves continue to confound a little bit early in the season. And again, I don't have any answers for you. I'm sitting here on the radio trying to go, what do you want me to say about the bullpen?
The ebb and flow of – somebody has to step up.
The only thing I got, literally the only thing I got is to say, okay – if you believe in Dan Winkler and, say, Luke Jackson, all right, let's just say those two.
Give them a shot.
We believe in those two. Then get rid of everybody else. Get rid of everybody else. Send them to AAA or cut them or do whatever. Just get rid. And then bring up all those young arms, the Newcombs, the Wrights, the Wilsons, and put them in middle relief.
I can
relief.
Answer that question for you, John, because you still believe in some of these guys. You still believe in A.J. Minter's stuff. And I've heard that quite a bit. Even though he's giving you the night and he almost gave you another night last night after he vowed not to give you another night like that. You still believe in this stuff. But I will say this. It's starting to get to the point now where it's like, bro, you're doing nothing but giving me a lot of lip service.
You know, they're in love with the heat of Sabatka and Minter. Okay, I get it. But being in love with the heat and not producing and not producing and not producing and not producing. Enough. I mean, it's just enough.
And then
how much
on
more
top
do
of that,
need?
You don't want them to go somewhere else and figure it out either. You don't want that to happen.
I mean, if they go somewhere else and figure it out, there's nothing you can do about that. Yeah. I mean – If they're not going to figure it out here.
Yeah, but you still want to give them an opportunity.
How many opportunities does A.J. Minter need?
A few more, John
Apparently
Fricky.
So. I mean, it's not like he hadn't had a ton.
Because he's vowed on more than one occasion to get it right for us.
He is.
And hopefully he does soon.
He has thrown more gas on games than, I mean, wow. Because when A.J. Minter blows a save, oh, dude, he blows it. It's like 5,000 tons of TNT.
Didn't get a chance to last night, though, thank goodness. Thank goodness he didn't get a chance to last night.
All right. I'll get out of my feelings.
Get out of your feelings, John Fricky. It's going to work. Somebody has to step up. Somebody has to get this done.
That doesn't help me because I don't have any faith in anybody stepping up right now. All right, let's get back into the NFL. We'll take a kind of a larger look at what happened with the draft. We'll also tell you next, because we haven't had a chance to talk about it much, the audio is out on Tyreek Hill. Have you heard it? It's really not good. But there's a secondary story to that, too, about whether or not that audio auto exists. This is not a good situation for the Chiefs. We'll play that for you as we continue next with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 99 The Game. Morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. A reminder that, and I know it's a couple hours away, but at 9:20 this morning, Thomas Dimitroff, general manager of the Atlanta Falcons, live on the program talking about the draft and looking ahead to rookie minicamp and to the season and some of the other rookies too. We're going to kind of get into the draft a little bit here with the Falcons coming up, but we wanted to spend some time talking about the NFL because there's other news going on in the league besides just the draft. And for Kansas City, the news is not good. As you know, they had bad trouble with Kareem Hunt and ended up having to cut Kareem Hunt. How much that cost them and eventually not making it to the Super Bowl, I'm not really sure, but it did cost them something, obviously. Now, Hunt is out for, I think, 8 games. Is that right, Hugh?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, something like that.
Before he can join the Cleveland Browns. Well, now they're about to, it appears, lose Tyreek Hill as well. Their star wide receiver, who just, I think, maybe 2 months ago, we were talking about Tyreek Hill and the rumors that Tyreek Hill was going to receive the biggest receiver contract in the history of the game.
Yes, he was about to get paid.
And he went from the biggest receiver contract in the history of the game to potentially not playing for a long time if he doesn't go to jail. I mean, it's not a good look.
This story is bad. I don't know what happens after this. There's been too many examples of guys in the NFL who've done certain things and who have gotten second and third chances. This was pretty bad, though, John. I'm, you know, just on the surface of it, not knowing all the details, just listening to the audio and everything that has come out over the last few weeks. This one's pretty bad.
So, and especially when it involves children,
yeah.
Adrian Peterson obviously sat out for an entire year because of the, you know, the pictures that arose about his son. So Tyreek Hill has a 3-year-old son whose arm ended up becoming broken. And Tyree, I think, says he fell down the stairs, but his fiance, Crystal Espinal, says that's not the case. So when they were traveling, they were walking through Dubai's international airport, okay, in Dubai. She's got her cell phone on, and she is, you know, unbeknownst to him, recording this entire conversation as a way to protect herself, I guess, and to frame him for actually breaking their 3-year-old son's arm. Here's a portion of the it's 11 minutes worth of audio, and you can go online and listen to the whole thing. We don't have time to play 11 minutes. But here's one of the critical portions that has the Kansas City Chiefs saying, we are seriously concerned, and the NFL saying, uh-oh.
He is terrified of you, and you say that he respects you, but it's not respect. It's terrified. He is terrified of you.
You need to be terrified of me, too.
And now somehow this investigation got brought back up, and you're about to lose your. So now I really want you to sit and think about it because I rode for you against that detective and the CPS people, and they said time and time again that literally.
You need to be terrified of me too.
When I heard that initially, I was like, wow. I mean, wow. Like, wow, for him to say all of that. And not only that, dude, she honestly, John, she kind of set him up.
And oh, no, she didn't kind of set him up. She set him up.
She set him up.
Kind of about it.
It's unfortunate that to me what it sounded like. Like she was trying to build a case against him, but at the same time, she implicated herself in the harming of their 3-year-old child. And the last that I heard of the story was that, you know, they took the child out of the home. Because in some of those recorded conversations, she even admitted that she whooped the child at a couple times. So it's unfortunate that I don't know their relationship. It's unfortunate that it has come to this. It's unfortunate that a child is suffering because of all of this. But man, only thing I can say is I Tyreek needs to get help. She needs to get help. They need to figure it out. But the child is going to, more than likely, she's not going to have the child for a long time.
Yeah, both of them are not looking good in this.
Matter not fact, at all.
So much so that the county prosecutor in Kansas City said, yes, there's been a crime committed here, but I don't know which one of these people to charge. How about
I think they're probably both going to be charged.
Yeah, how about
they're probably both
right.
going to be charged. It's just unfortunate. I mean, you got to know who you're dealing with. You have to know who the individuals you're dealing with. And for Tariq Hill, he probably needs to go get some help, man. He definitely needs to go get some help. She needs to go get some help as well. They both need to get some help.
And the NFL is going to rule later this week about Hill. They'll probably put him on some kind of, you know, long suspension pending the outcome of all of this. The child has been removed from the home, and so whatever it is, it's not good. So now the Kansas City Chiefs go into the draft because now they know that they're probably going to be without Tyreek Hill for an appreciable amount of time if they get him back at all. And so they have to kind of replace that. So they go higher than some people expect in drafting Mecole Hardman from Georgia because he's that kind of a guy. I mean, he's a speed guy that, you know, Mahomes can find, and he's mm-hmm. just pure flash, and he's probably going to have a good career. And then it turns out, here's the other part of this, Drew Lock and Mecole Hardman. Now, I need to ask a question after I tell you this. Both of those guys tweeted out when they were 13 years old problematic stuff, okay? And so people were mining the Twitters of all these draft picks, and Drew Lock apparently sent 5 tweets when he was 13 years old that's seriously problematic, not just mentioning Nick Bosa's tweets. And then there was tweets from Mecole Hardman Hugh when he was 13 years old.
What did Mecole say? What did they both – well, give me a gist of what they both said.
They were homophobic, and he said, that's not who I am now, okay? So he's 13 years old. Drew Lock is 13 years old. Now, a couple of things here. Where are the colleges – when you come to college, where is the person at your school saying, hey, listen, we need to go through your social media right then and there
because
when you first show
up? It has not, John, it has not become a big deal until now. I've never known a time where you get in trouble for something that you said 10, 15 years ago. That's almost like, to me, it's the equivalent of going to prison, serving your time in prison. And then somebody you become you're supposed to be a productive citizen, and then they bring up the fact that you've been in prison or something to that effect. You're talking about guys who, when they're 13, 12 years old, that have probably tweeted with their friends, said something really, really stupid, and now they're getting in trouble with it. Same thing happened with Sean Newcomb.
Yeah, Sean Newcomb.
Last year when
he was
having
a great
season.
Who think that Sean Newcomb hadn't been the same pitcher since they found these tweets.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure that because, that's the case, man, but, you know, take your edge. I don't know. I don't know that I – consider that, but you could survive. I mean, they're 13 years old.
Yeah, but you can't nowadays. It's almost like being in the government or being running for office or something. You have to be careful about what you put out there in the atmosphere, especially on social media. Some of these pictures that you like to take, it never goes away. They never go away, and you have to be real careful about what you say about certain situations. Because somebody's going to screenshot them. There's somebody out there right now that has gone through your timelines, gone through mine, and waiting for something to happen so that they could bring it back up later on in whenever it's relevant. That's what happened. The same thing happened to Nick Bosa. Same thing happened to a couple other people. It's just, it is what it is.
So explain to me why, you know, I think these colleges and universities are doing these athletes an incredible injustice. And, not injustice, that's the wrong word. An incredible disservice. The university, pick one, okay,
mm-hmm.
should have hire somebody to be your social media. You've got a gazillion people, right? Hire somebody to be the social media minor and minder, okay? He or she is not in charge of putting out tweets or doing all they're in charge of is monitoring the tweets and the posts and the everything from all the athletes that are currently and flagging anything that might be problematic, like Nick Bosa's tweets, and getting on the phone immediately and say, Nick, you got to take that down. Let's review it. And because you don't want him to hurt.
Yeah, but think about it like
forward.
This, though, John. Even after Nick Bosa did that, they still got out. Like I said, somebody screenshots all of these. Somebody right. is a watchdog in you.
Right.
So they before he even had the wherewithal
the
to think
I,
about
I understand that.
They had the screenshots. Right.
But still, you need somebody to kind of do – but where's that person whenever you bring an athlete in to immediately spend all the time to mine their social media to find – you know, how does the University of Missouri not know about these tweets when Drew Locke was 13? How does the University of Georgia not know about these Mecole Hardman tweets when he was 13? You should have been mining their social media.
They probably did, John, but he could play. You got to think that when you're young, you don't think that these tweets that you have when you're 13 are going to have that kind of impact.
I understand. I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about how does the University
no,
not
but
know
that's
about
what I'm saying, John, because he's an athlete. He's a football player. He's somebody that you want on your football team, so you're going to overlook certain things that you aren't. No, I know what you're saying, John. You're talking about somebody going in and looking at his tweets.
Right.
Somebody probably did do that. Didn't make a difference. They didn't feel like those tweets that he sent out were that egregious to keep him from going to college. They weren't thinking about the next level. They were thinking about just on the college level.
Yeah, I'm not even thinking about – I don't think that they're egregious to keep him out of college either. I'm just saying you would go through and find these and say, look, at some point these could come back on you. Get rid of them.
We're talking about the same thing, John, but what I'm trying to get you to understand is this. As long as you're doing a service for me, I don't care about what the next person. That's the next person's problem. You understand what I'm saying? It wasn't a problem for them in college. They probably saw these tweets, but for them in college, it wasn't an issue. You see what I'm saying?
Homophobic stuff in college is not at a college campus is not an
it's
issue.
It wasn't an issue for them. It wasn't an issue for okay. them at that time. Think about it like this, John. Look how much.
And if you're an agent, aren't you?
Look
doing
at it like this, John. Look how much social media has changed the landscape of everything in the last, 10 years. So you're telling me at 13, when Twitter's fairly new, that you feel that those tweets would come back and bite you. Nobody's thinking that way. You're thinking that way now because they have come back and bit a lot
right.
of people.
I understand
but you're not
that.
Thinking about that 5 years ago or 6 years ago. You're not thinking like that 6 years ago. But nowadays, you have to think like
I'm
that.
I'm just wondering, where are the agents? My first thing as an agent once I sign you as a player is I'm getting...
Oh, somebody. You're doing it now. You best believe you're doing it now.
Well, but they didn't, obviously, in this case.
Because nobody thought about it. That's what I'm saying, John. This is fairly new. Guys are starting to get in trouble for what they've tweeted in the past. This is a fairly new thing. That's what I'm talking about. We're talking about the same thing, but it's this has become a problem more so now than it's ever been before.
Yeah, I don't know why you wouldn't. Okay. It just seems to me I would have done that. But yeah, and you should do it too. If you think you've got problematic stuff out there, you mind your own social media. Go back and make sure you didn't. May take you a minute, but it's not a bad thing to do. All right, anyway, we got a lot going on here. We're going to get a national perspective of what the Falcons did from Lance Zierlein of NFL.com. He's going to join us live next. What does he grade the Falcons draft as? It's on the morning show with John and Hugh. Lance Zierlein live next. Falcons fans grading their overall draft this morning on our Twitter at 929 the game. So far, B is winning. And when you vote in the poll, I'm less interested in your letter grade than I am in the comments section. So do explain why you voted the way you did, because I think that's the more fascinating discussion, again, on our Twitter this morning at 929 the game. Let's get another perspective from outside our little bubble here in Atlanta. We welcome into the program one of the true draft specialists out there, Lance Zierlein of NFL.com, who joins us this morning on the WadeFord.com hotline. Morning to you, Lance.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing pretty good. We're still trying to, figure out this draft. Lance, from your perspective, was the McGarry trade up to get McGarry, was that a reach for the Atlanta Falcons in your mind?
Well, I mean, I thought he was. I thought there was a decent chance he could go on the first because tackles get pushed up, and we saw the Texans take Titus Howard, which is indicative of that. I don't know if it was a huge reach at all. It's a little higher than I had him graded, but I thought he was a 1-2, basically could go first or early second. So I didn't think it was a huge reach. I don't know that I would have turned it up for him personally, but. He is a guy who should become a starting right tackle. So from that standpoint, I think the Falcons picked up a couple of new starters up front, the offensive line.
Lance Zierlein of NFL.com. Lance, we talked to Steve Adazio, Chris Lidstrom's head coach. And one of the questions I asked him, and he it wasn't that he was evasive. He just he didn't quite go all the way to saying yes. I asked him, is he a day one starter? And I guess it's impossible. It's maybe unfair to ask him because he's not an NFL head coach with this team, so he can't really know. But in your mind, if you draft guys in the first round, you're not drafting them to be backups, right?
No, I think he's a day one starter. I think he just didn't want to get out there and say yes, and then if it doesn't happen, he makes his guy look bad. You know what I mean? Mm. I think he's just being careful. He probably doesn't know all the Falcons situation, the roster. You know, he's got his own team to worry about. So I think he just wanted to be careful about that answer because he didn't have all the information. I'll answer for him, yes. He should be a day one starter. And it's not just because he's a first rounder. It's because he's talented enough to be a day one starter. It's just a need for the Falcons.
So when you look at this Falcons defensively, because there's a lot of people that say, like, when you look at the Falcons offensively, you know, technically, when you look at where they were ranked last year, I think they were in the top 10 as far as offenses were concerned. You really didn't need these two offensive linemen. And they feel like you needed to address the defense a little bit more. What do you say about that?
Well, you know, I mean, when the Falcons got to the Super Bowl, one of the reasons is because they ran the ball really effectively on one side of the run. And I think this is kind of indicative of a desire to get deep to where it used to be in terms of being able to impose your will with a running game and then work behind it with a passing game. You know, it's great to be able to throw the football. It's great to have Julio. It's great to have Matt Ryan. You have Calvin Ridley. But, I mean, I think the passing game is a lot better when teams have to respect the run, and that starts up front in the trenches. And I think that this is a direct correlation of let's win up front in the trenches so we can get our running game going. And that's what I saw in this year's draft from the Falcons, at least in the first round.
Lance Zierlein of NFL.com. Lance, which team, let's broaden this out a little bit, just broadly, which team had the most problematic draft? I mean, you've graded all the teams, right? Correct?
No, I didn't actually. I didn't have to. I graded all the players. I to be honest with you, I told my editors whenever.
Well, there may have gone the phone. Yep.
Hello. I think that went south.
I'm sorry there. I lost you for a second, guys.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I'm a big fan of not grading drafts. You
okay.
know why? Because these are tests that haven't been taken. I mean, these guys haven't played one time. So who cares if my opinion is one thing? And what happens if these guys go out and overplay what my opinion of them was? You know, who am I to say who had a bad draft or a good draft? I can tell you I like more than others, but I'm just concerned I'm not putting grades on drafts because it's a test that hasn't been taken. I mean, they haven't played one single game, so we'll see how it works out. But, you know, I didn't love the Falcons draft. I'll just come out and tell you now. I like Lindstrom a lot. I didn't love him that high. McGarry, for me, I think he's good. I don't think he's great, but there's not a lot of great tackles in this draft. I think what concerns me a little bit is you don't have another pick now until the fourth round, and you get a couple of developmental players. And John Kaminsky has the body type and the traits, but he's very much developmental, and he may take some time from that small college. And then Kendall Sheffield, that's another traits pick. Height, weight, speed. Really, really fast. But from a tape standpoint, you know, he's not a fourth rounder from a tape standpoint, in my opinion. I think he's just still learning how to cover, but he's got all the tools to do it. He's just got to learn to do it now. I think that's the concern.
Yeah, Lance, I appreciate your taking a few minutes. Thanks, Lance Zierlein of NFL.com.
You're the man, Lance.
Yeah, that phone never did clear up. Looking at down line, you talked about Kendall Sheffield, the cornerback from Ohio State, who was one of the fastest guys at the NFL Combine. He tore his pec last month, and so he's not going to be available for a while. But they obviously speed, and more speed with Kendall Sheffield, and hopefully he's back, you know, in the not-too-distant future. But a torn pec, that's, you know, something tough to overcome. Then I'm, you know, Kaminsky is an interesting guy. I think they want to put weight on him, make him a defensive tackle. Olison, he's the guy that I'm really focused in on the Saturday draft.
Quadri Olison, the running back
out of Pittsburgh. You know, just watching him on film again, and I had seen him play a couple of times in college. I know there are Georgia fans who are mad that Elijah Holyfield wasn't drafted by the Falcons. And
you're going up the street, though.
Yeah, I know.
Carolina.
Yeah, I know. We're going up to Carolina. But Wilson's got a little hop and a little bit of speed, but boy, he can block really well. And that was what kind of jumped off at me. Yes, he's a bigger back who can help move the pile and get those third and ones. 230-pound, kind of a bowling ball of a running back. but I was really impressed with the way he picked up the blitz. And that is obviously they put a premium on this, protecting Matt Ryan, because here's a guy in Allison who can block really well. Big as strong as he is, good on his feet, picks up the blitz well. You've got Stocker as a tight end, as a blocking tight end. This is like a max protect thing when it comes to protecting Matt Ryan. They were damned and determined to do that.
And then when you look at it, John, the most of the money for this team is on the offensive side of the ball. You got to protect your assets, and you got to put your offense in position to be successful. I know a lot of people are feeling that, you know, this defense, you need to bolster up this defense and get them going. But if this offense is out there dictating to the other team's off defense, and if they're out there controlling the clock and things of that nature, you're going to still make that team one-dimensional, and you're going to put your defense in a position to be successful. But you got to get after the quarterback. That's the biggest thing going into this season that they're going to have to put a more of an emphasis on, is putting pressure on the quarterback.
Boy, it seems like they're rewinding the clock back to 2016, to the Super Bowl season. Because if you think about the Super Bowl season, what did that season have? Offensive line that didn't miss a game, right? Protected Matt Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to that, okay? We're going to get an offensive line that protects Matt Ryan, and we're going to try and dictate offensively what we do. Got the number one offensive coordinator in the league from the highest scoring team in the league in Dirk Cutter. I think that this is emulating that. And who was the defensive coordinator during the Super Bowl run at the end of the year? Dan Quinn. Who's the defensive coordinator now? Dan Quinn. He brings Adrian Claiborne back.
Better
all right.
Get to the quarterback.
Man, I'm just telling you.
Better get to the QB. That's all I got to say. You got to get to the QB.
Hey, where did some of those Georgia guys end up going? And Georgia Tech and Georgia State. We have the list. We'll tell you that next. And your grades on the NFL draft as we continue to look back on the weekend that was in the draft. On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, that's after the break. And at the top of the hour, your chance to react as well. With John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.